They say plants like music.
Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, welcome to the CarCast Edmonds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndre, here with Alistair Weaver. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks, Matt. Yeah. Happy Friday as we record
Happy Friday, yeah, as we record this on a Friday. Before we get started, let me tell you guys about BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. They have every stat, every matchup, even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker or unwind with over 150 different slot games. So just head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BELIEVE for 50% welcome bonus off your first deposit. It's BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus. Bet online. The game starts here. Did you see the buzz about Willow Springs Raceways for sale?
Yeah, I'm actually going up there in a couple of weeks' time to drive a fast Audi. Because we've hired the bus, the Streets of Willow, which is used by tons of manufacturers, tons of people like media like us, which is a really fun little circuit. And then there's Big Willow, which is obviously the famous racetrack. Yeah, I saw it for sale. I was like, oh,
you should bring your offers. This wouldn't be a bad little investment for Edmonds.
That would be quite a cool. Yeah, I was thinking, like, do we use this as a could we turn this into our test track? It would be
business to run, so this is an interesting
that's the tricky bit proposition. If it was just like a test track, but there's like the whole business of running a raceway, but it's like the childish fantasy, isn't it? What do you want to do? I want to buy a racetrack. Maybe you could turn it into kind of like a thermal, if you're not, I mean, when was the last time you were at Willow Springs, Matt?
You know, it's been a minute. I don't remember. Maybe it's been 2-3 years now.
Yeah, it's old school. Like, if you go to somewhere like Thermal in Palm Springs, which is very much set up as kind of an experience for wealthy people, it's all very swish restaurants. Willow is none of that. It's a proper old school circuit near Lancaster. If you're not familiar with Southern California, it's like 2 hours drive from LA, but out into the desert. Yeah. There's not a lot there. There's not a lot of posh hotels. There's not a lot of what you might call infrastructure to support, you know, people turning up with exotic cars. It's super characterful, though. It's super picturesque. It is a daunting circuit, like the final corner becoming before the main straightaway where the pits are. I mean, you just go to YouTube in some prodigious accidents. It's a proper old school, not massively safe, very fast track.
And we're looking at like the aerial photos, and it's just dirt. And someone who buys this and wants to keep the business, there are some interesting things you can do without doing this huge redevelopment and turning it into thermal and putting condos out there. Like, you could do something with this, certainly with the infield of Big Willow. You know, those other tracks like Laguna Seca, you know, they have a bridge so you can get to the infield, you know, like doing something like that. And you may be planting a couple of trees. It's just all brown. It's just so much brown.
And just the cafes and the whole garages. It's real. If you want to go and get, you know, I think they used a lot of it for filming Ford versus Ferrari, the Matt Damon movie. And it pops up in loads of OEM stuff and else, because it's very neutral. It's just like a desert backdrop, so it could almost be anywhere. It's, I mean, I love going up there because it's like, hey, I've got it. You can rent it for not all the streets of Willow for not that much money. And then it's like, hey, we've got a private racetrack to go and throw. So a lot of our videos, yeah. I'm thinking like ZR1 against 911 GT3, things like that, we shot up there. And I'm heading out there for an Audi event in a couple of weeks' time. It's great. And it's also 2 hours from LA. So if you were going to buy it, then, you know, and you've got some millions, because that's what it would take to spend, then, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity here. Personally, I'm a little bit sad because it's been kind of attainable for people like us to go and rent for a day. And if somebody does buy it and turn it into kind of, you know, glitz and glamour, that's probably going to hike the price up. But I mean, yeah, I agree with that.
So I think you can do some repairs. You can do some landscaping. You can do a few things. You can invest into it and then just moderately increase the rental prices to help offset some of that. And over time, like I don't know enough about the track and some of its issues, but when I say the track, there are 7 different tracks at Willow Springs, and people mostly think of Big Willow and Streets of Willow, but everything that they have there, there's quite a bit, and there's the racing school, and there's a couple of other things. So
if memory serves me, Matt, I think Nigel Mansell in a Lotus F1 car in the early 80s or something had the lap record. And I think maybe an Indy car, it might be Michael Andretti. We could probably look it up. But I remember just thinking it must have been absolutely. I mean, Mansell was a man with, like, I was trying to think of the appropriate expression for a podcast. It was an enormous courage. And, you know, Ferrari, the Italians called him El Leone, but to drive an F1 car around there, you know, that's proper. That's like 60s style, you know, F1. That's proper hardcore. Yeah, very atmospheric, very cool place. It's a bit like, I was like thinking about it when I heard it was a sale last night. It's a bit like that kind of like teenage fancy. Could I go and buy a race circuit and what could we do with it? I don't know, mate. We need somebody with a few million knocking around that we could go and, you know, live the dream. But it's also, it's out near Lancaster, and it is hot out there.
It's hot out there.
I mean, it's either hot out there or really cold. I've been up there when I've been
windy,
in like,
and it has that windy.
And windy as hell. Yeah.
And because there's no landscaping, there's just dirt.
Tumbleweed everywhere.
And like sandblasting your car. I was out there with LFAs and we had to hide inside, and they're like, hide the cars on the side of the building. It just felt like you were standing in the movie Dune. Like, it was just nuts.
I've been up there when it's been like minus 50 and, you know, you're in like full polar gear. And I've also been up there when it's been like 150. And every time you step outside, you get fried. So it's...
There is a little airport nearby. And I didn't even remember that it was there. But I was invited to like a track day with a bunch of people. And the press car I was driving at the time was an Alfa Romeo Stelvio Quattrofoglio. So I think that's the SUV, right? So
that's the fast SUV. That's the, that's
the fast SUV. And I thought it would be kind of fun. You know who put it together was a friend of mine who's a stunt driver who did a Baby Driver and a lot of the John Wick stuff. And he invited a bunch of friends, rented the track. We all chipped in a couple of bucks and went up there. And I was like, you know, we should invite Tanner to come out. And I was like, yeah, and we'll shoot some video. We'll get some content with the Alfa Romeo.
Tanner Faust, yeah.
Yeah, Tanner Faust. And I was like, Tanner, you don't even need a car, because he was like, can I just fly? It's like, I guess, where's there an airport? And there's a little airport. So he flew his plane, and he has like a fold up electric bicycle that he threw in the passenger seat of his plane or whatever. And he just flew, unfolded his bike, scooted on over. We did a track day together, and he's like, all right, see ya. And just got back in his plane and flew home. It was worked out great.
Way too cool for me.
Yeah. And then he gets to show up and drive other people's cars.
The coolest version I ever saw of that was at the Goodwood, not the Festival of Speed, the Goodwood Revival, which if you're ever wanting to go to one of these events, that's the one to go to in September. And everybody dresses in sort of 50s gear, and it's hugely atmospheric. And they always, because it was used as a World War II, and it's very pertinent in the week of commemorating D-Day, because it was used as an airfield in the Second World War for Spitfires and Hurricanes and everything else, they always have the Battle of Britain planes, and we were all waiting to go into this ball, this beautiful black tie event, and some of these like Spitfire came round, landed, taxied it up to where we're all standing, where the ball started. Guy gets out in like a full flying jacket, peels the flying jacket off, black tie, beautiful tuxedo underneath, steps out of a Spitfire straight in the ball. I was like, that is the coolest thing I have literally ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I was, we were there. I was out there. We were filming interviews and stuff for one of the documentaries, and you're right, at going to the Revival is where the air show is, I believe, and seeing that with the cars and everybody sort of dressed up, period correct, super fun. It was such a great.
Amazing event. You think like Pebble Beach and the whole Monterey thing's cool? It is, but it's not as cool as like getting into period, and it's
Yeah.
fantastic. But
But when you go there, everybody talks like you.
yeah, no, they don't talk like me. I'm from Northern England. I'm not posh enough. They don't talk like me at all. They talk terribly nicely, and it's all Vegas and Mars. I can't really. It's a bit more Hugh Grant than my kind of northern commonness. Where were we? Buying Willow Springs. If we're not buying
So
Willow
anyway,
Springs, which
yeah.
I probably don't have a few spare few million lying around, even though it would be amazing fun. We could just move our whole operation out there. We do, apart from the fact we'd all have to go and live in the middle of the desert, and that might be a recruitment issue.
Yeah, that's the other issue is you buy this thing, you got to hire people to run it, and people who run it either have to do like a 2 hour commute or hour and a half commute, or have to end up living out in that area. But
Lancaster's not. I mean, Lancaster's got its nice points, but it's yeah, it's a fun thing. I hope we get a chance to use it a bit more.
shifting gears a little bit, McLaren. A brand that I'm a fan of. I know you are as well. We spoken highly about some of their cars, particularly the 720S. I haven't driven the 750S, but I imagine that's just a better version of the 720. But we're talking about a company that lost about $1 billion in 2023 due to slow sales and struggled to really make a profit on their supercars and hypercar series. I think, is it supercar and hypercar, or is it?
Yeah, that's the right
Yeah.
way around.
Yeah. I think it is, right? So
It's super sports, basically. Yeah.
they've struggled a little bit financially to kind of make it all work, but I think they're turning out some pretty impressive product. But following in the footsteps of so many other car companies, in developing an SUV, it's something that the previous CEO of McLaren said they weren't really interested in doing. But the tides may be turning a little bit. Look at what Ferrari, Aston Martin, Lamborghini, Lotus now, an electric SUV, if you will. And SUV maybe a little broad because of a term, just because it's a four-seater and kind of has that SUV sort of feel to it in size. It None of those things are really probably going to be all that great off-road, and will probably never really see dirt, and are meant to be super high performance. I don't know. McLaren is saying, sort of hinting at doing something similar, but they were having some fun with it. They were calling it a shared performance vehicle. You can bring one person in your McLaren currently as a guest. This would be shared to more than one guest.
It's a good story. I was talking to the PR guy at the we talked a couple of shows ago about going to the Weird Artura event with the mermaid
Yeah.
in Beverly Hills. But yeah, I never understood it. It was almost like a badge of honor that they used to keep saying, we're not going to do an SUV, we're a sports car brand. And it's like, why? Like, it's a bit like, it reminded me when Jaguar, there was a period when Jaguar used to say, we're not going to do a diesel when 80% of the European market was diesel in that class. And it's like, well, Mercedes sells like 80% of S classes at the moment diesel. I'm it. And so some of it was probably like resource. They didn't want to diversify into doing an SUV at the time. But that's where the money is. The reality is, for all that we talk about it, and for all that, people put it on their bedroom walls and talk about it on Instagram, the market for super sports cars, so the market for McLarens, Lamborghini, Huracans, and all the Ferraris and that sort of stuff is tiny, like You're never going to sell it. You know, the reality is Lamborghini never sold more than about 6,000 vehicles a year just selling sports cars. And McLaren's in that same position. So is pretty much everybody else. So the so it's because, you know, there just aren't that many people wanting to spend $500,000 on a super sports car. So you got to diversify. Now, Lamborghini can do it easily because they've got all the Volkswagen group behind them. So the Urus is also kind of the Bentley is also the Q8. There's a lot of, and the Cayenne, there's a lot of shared componentry. You know, McLaren needs a partner to do it, but it's also, I just find philosophically a bit mad. I mean, like, you know, I'm a family guy these days. You know, I have a classic 911, but it barely gets used because the kids can't go in it. Whereas having something like that that you could actually use and enjoy just makes a load of sense. And it's particularly in the US where you drive big distances and, you know, the roads are a bit crap and you want to go to, you know, you want to go out to your race circuit and, you know, if you want to go out and, you know, go on a vacation for a weekend, it just makes a load of sense. So, yeah, I think if you want to take your volume from, say, 6,000 to 12,000 something, you know, look at what sells. It's the Urus that sells for Lamborghini. I'm sure the Ferrari Purist Anger will do extremely, extremely well. It's the Bentayga that sells for Bentley. It's not the sedans or the coupe. So, you know, and it's, let's face it, it's not done the Porsche brand any harm. You know, Porsche by sales volume is an SUV brand. But, you know, they've always run the argument that the SUVs allow us to do 911s and GT3s and all the rest of it. So, fair enough. I got no issue with it. And I find some of the kind of nonsense around, oh, they're, you know, ruining the brand. It's just ridiculous. Build a car that, it's dead simple. Build a car that people want, that people can use. And your company will be more successful than building a bunch of cars that actually nobody really wants to buy.
And they would have to partner up with somebody to make this happen. And I'm trying to figure out sort of the fit for a McLaren and what sort of SUV or sedan or sort of hybrid type of vehicle, and who would be a good partner for that. And I don't know, maybe something like BMW, like BMW's XM.
If you make a pretty XM, you're onto a winner. It's not that difficult to improve on the aesthetics, but yeah, I mean, it's the platform. It's I mean, BMW, you know, we're about to talk about a vehicle that has a BMW engine, but BMW has been, you know, making its engines available to everybody from kind of Morgan to SUV to off-road brands. But it's the platform, it's the underpinnings that you need. And we've seen, you know, Aston Martin doing deals with Lucid, sorry, which gives you access to both the platforms and a lot of the EV technology. Now, you can argue that's two struggling companies that are trying to, you know, that are banding together. It's like an unusual band of brothers. But yeah, they looking for some sort of strategic partnership. And McLaren was consolidated. All the shareholders were basically bought out. So it's now owned by Bahrainis or Qataris, or it's so they've now in one ownership, and that makes it a lot easier to make the decision. So it's been no secret that McLaren's looking for some sort of partnership with a much bigger brand, and then they've got access to more technology. So it's exciting. I think it's exactly what they need to be doing. And the Formula One team's doing well. They're into IndyCar. The brand recognition's going up. So, you know, it's not a bad place to be, but you're never going to run a, it's so difficult to run a profitable company selling, you know, 6,000 sports cars a year. Unless you're like a singer or something like that, which is then taking something else and modifying it. It's super difficult, really difficult.
Yeah. And I wonder if this is going to help Lotus as well. And is their vehicle going to be successful, or is it going to end up being a cash cow for them? Because Lotus doesn't really have much of a, I guess that they have kind of a flagship car now, and they have the Emira, which is kind of the bread and butter of what they're trying to, as far as volume.
Well, the Emira is, they're in a different place because they're owned by Geely, which is also Volvo, Polestar. You know, so they're now part of a bigger, much bigger group, which of course McLaren isn't. So Lotus, you know, Lotus is in a strange place. It has so much kind of brand equity from a bit like Alfa Romeo. It goes way back to all the Formula One. I don't know how much of it plays out in the US in the same way. But, you know, it's always had this feeling that if you just get the right owners for Lotus and the right investment, then away you go. And now it's effectively Chinese owned, partnering with Volvo and Polestar and everybody else. So they've got to, you know, as long as they keep investing and as long as they can actually turn it into a viable company, then, you know, it's potentially a really interesting time for Lotus. Very different position to McLaren in that they're just not an independent anymore. So, you know, then it's beholden to the mothership keeping investing.
I wonder if the Lotus SUV being all electric was the right move, as opposed to some sort of hybrid technology. But like you're saying, but when you're thinking about who owns them, then all electric probably makes more sense. But
I
yeah,
think
kind
it
of.
was the sort of portfolio bit, wasn't it, that was trying to, you know, I think it was the portfolio bit that was really trying to, you know, that where they sit in the kind of the broader spectrum. So what does Polestar do? What does Volvo do? What do they
Yeah,
do?
that's exactly what I'm thinking. It's because they're so leaned in on electric that this probably makes the most sense as far as going into their parts bin and trying to find what's there. And then
And you've got
also,
the Amira still, but the Amira is, and the Amira is this, you know, is obviously not an EV. And I think it's such, I saw it in LA the other day, such a pretty car. But that is a, you know, that's a stepping stone for them. But
yeah, but and Lotus doesn't really have an engine, like a big enough engine for an SUV. If you go all electric and use electric motors, but like I mean, you'd have to partner with, like we were saying, like with a BMW or an Audi or something, the way, you know, Aston Martin did on their V8 with Mercedes or AMG, but they have their own 12. You know, Ferrari has their own engine, but what, who are you going to pull from? Toyota?
well, they have done historically, but yeah. If I could bring one in, the Lotus, if you don't live in California and have all the smog issues, and if you could import an Elise Series 1, which was never sold in the US, the Lotus Elise Series 1 is still, if there's one car that was like the first genuine sports car I drove when I joined Auto Car back in 98 as a 21-year-old, that is an amazing car to drive, just as a pure driving experience. So if I imagine people are starting to import them into the US now, it's obviously 25-year rule and everything else, but they're difficult to maintain because one little bump and trying to get, you know, you end up replacing a whole clamshell, but they were a fabulous, fabulous car. Better in many ways than the Series 2, which was probably a better technical car, but was a little bit less pure because they were starting to appeal to a broader audience. But anyway, we digress. Big, you
Yeah.
know, Lotus is, my parents live near Lotus headquarters, and if you ever get the chance to go, there's a very kind of emotive place. Classic Team Lotus is there, and they've got all the Senna cars, and it's but it is right in the middle of nowhere. If you think about the UK and where it has the motorsport triangle, where all the Formula One teams are, Lotus is kind of like three hours to the east of that. So they've always struggled a little bit with the geography. So, but it's cool.
Yeah, man, talk about a company that's kind of shifted its ownership and direction over the years. That poor company's been passed around all over the place and just been ups and downs and so many different thoughts and concept ideas, concept cars, vehicles. At one point they're like, we're doing one vehicle, and at one point we're like, we're doing six vehicles. And just it never really panned out. They always just sort of had one.
Every time I used to go up there, it was either you'd either turn up and there's like 1,000 people starting that day, or it was like you'd turn up there and there's 1,000 people leaving, like the roller coaster. And they, there was a period where they built something called the Vauxhall VX220, which was basically a spin-off the Elise, and Lotus built it for Vauxhall, which is Opel, part of GM at the time. And I got commissioned by a customer magazine. This is in the days when they still did customer magazines, pretty much don't these days. So anyway, could I go up to Lotus and talk to the workforce who are built, you know, building by hand this wonderful Vauxhall Roadster? No problem. So I get there, drive out there, get this, like, yeah, you can't talk to anybody online. It's like, why can't I talk to anybody? Because we just announced 15% layoff, but nobody knows who yet. So morale is not quite where we want it. It's like, right. So my commission is basically like, talk to a bunch of people how excited they are to build this product. And basically 15% of the people, it's like it's all, you know, it was the kind of, yeah, it was the long goodbye. So it's had a crazy career, as have so many, you know, so many of these smaller companies, and they're still hanging on to this legacy. And you know, they were in Formula One a few years ago, but even that was like a weird badge engineering thing. That was all that about. It's a bit like Alfa Romeo. I mean, Alfa Romeo's ownership is a bit more solid, but, or has historically been a bit more solid, but they're still just clinging on. I mean, Jaguar's a bit like that as well. You know, you cling on to something that happened in, 60s, 70s, 80s, and you haven't actually done anything that memorable for 40 years.
And they've shifted ownership a couple of times. You're right.
You know what a Lotus used to stand for? You know, lots of trouble, usually serious. You heard that?
Yes, I have heard that. Yeah.
I
And
was
that's
looking at,
probably still pretty accurate. I was
I was
talking.
wanting an Esprit, you know, like the car from what, Basic Instinct and Pretty Woman. You know, it's like an iconic movie car. And I was looking at the values of them. They're like 60, 70 grand or something for one today. And I've driven one in the past, and they are really cool, but you just do feel like you're buying a bag of trouble.
And a little tough to see out of, but I always thought an affordable way to get attention if you want. Still today, you take a Lotus Esprit and you pull it up to the valet. It's getting parked up front. It still looks great. I
The
think.
Giugiaro, the classic 70s Giugiaro wedge that went all the way through the 70s and then ultimately pretty much to the end of the 90s. And by then it had like Peugeot switches and things like that. There was a lot. But you're right, you're going to feel like Sharon Stone. Oh, what's the other?
or
Oh,
Julia
Richard Gere.
Roberts.
Richard Gere, Sharon Stone or Richard Gere. Richard Gere
Yeah,
turned up, didn't he, in at the
he did,
Beverly
but
Hills
Julia
Show in
Roberts
his
drove it
Esprit.
for him because he had trouble driving it. Yeah, in that movie.
Great
But
days.
all right, hold on 1 second. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so let's talk about the Ineos. This has
Yes.
come up in the past, and we talked a little bit about this on the Shift and Steer podcast as well. Ineos, I guess you can kind of give us the overview of what the story is here. So, because not a lot of people are familiar with Ineos out here, although they are starting to make more of a presence. I was just at the Long Beach Grand Prix, like the weekend before the IndyCar race. I was there for drifting and stuff, and I was a guest of Ineos. And we had a nice time, but there wasn't a whole lot of information about what they are. So explain what Ineos is.
So I was actually just looking at my Instagram, well, Weaver on Cars, and I was actually pulled out a post that I did from September the 20th, 2017, which was a picture of a pub in central London called the Grenadier with two defenders parked outside it, Land Rover defenders. And we were all kind of called to this sort of unusual launch event. And we went in, and it was quite a small pub, and they started talking about, we wanted, the guy stood up and said, basically, I've always had a passion for the Land Rover Defender. That's the classic Land Rover. Land Rover's new Defender is going to be basically an SUV. I'm not interested in that. I want something that I can drive across Africa and fix up on the move. I've tried to buy like the Defender name and all the machine tooling and all of the production line from Land Rover, and Land Rover basically said, get lost. So
this
in
is
kind
the
of
owner of Ineos.
This is the owner of Ineos. So in classic sort of Lamborghini style, he basically said, right, I'm going to build my own. And at this time, no, this guy called James Ratcliffe, and nobody really knew who he was. And I remember somebody from the Financial Times like stuck up his hand and said, you don't realize like the development costs of this are going to be 700, 800 million pounds. What's that? Like $1 billion. And he kind of like paused, looked at him, and slightly sort of thing. Said, yeah, I mean, last year we made about 4.5 billion. It's like a little bit. It's like, yeah, Magnus Stirrer are going to do this. Bosch are going to do this. Sony's going to do this. And we were all a bit like, okay. And at that time, he was this sort of secretive billionaire who'd become, I think at that point, Britain's richest man. And what he made his money from was buying failing petrochemical companies around the world and turning them around. And I looked at him the other day. I think, you know, depending on how you estimate his wealth, it's like, you know, probably 40 billion or something, that kind of range. Or no, about 20 billion. So, you know, give or take 20 billion, that's where he is. And
so
since then, he's been
buying up fuel companies, oil companies, chemical companies.
Yeah, petrochemical companies, turning them around, making billions. And so he decided to do this. And basically, he did like Lamborghini did. He basically said, right, you're not going to sell it to me. I'm going to build my own and set off on a journey. And since then, he's become a lot more high profile. So you now have Ineos bought like a third of the Mercedes Formula One team. They have a Tour de France team. They bought Team Sky, and it's now the Ineos Grenadiers. They bought Nice Soccer Club. They bought the performance division of Manchester United Soccer Club. They've got America's Cup team. They've got, you know, so Ineos has suddenly become a much bigger known entity, a bit like Virgin or something like that.
And interesting, because he's not just like saying Ineos is going to sponsor all of these things. They're buying the actual organizations.
Yeah, a bit like Red Bull, a bit like what Dieter Mauritsch did at Red Bull. Why would I sponsor Formula One team when I can just buy one? So similar sort of dynamic. And the reason it's called Grenadier is he was sat in this pub with his mates, if you want to keep it in the British. He sat with his mates in the pub and in the Grenadier, and somebody said, well, why don't you just build one? I was all right then, I'm going to build one. So it's called the Grenadier. Oh, with Belstaff, the clothing brand, he also bought that. So,
so he's got this Land Rover-esque vehicle that he's building now.
Yeah, so the story kind of unfolds from here. So in the best kind of fashion of how you do these things, you go out and you put a bunch of suppliers together. So Magnus Stirrer, who built the G-Wagon and have done all sorts of things, they have been involved in a lot of the engineering. He then bought a former, I think it was a Mercedes or a Smart factory in Hambach, which I think is in France. So there's a kind of, it's almost like a European consortium of Germans. So engines and transmissions are from BMW. You've got, you know, it's built, I think, in France. You've got German and British badges on the side. For a guy who was like very much pro-Brexit and getting Britain out of the European Union, this is like a great example of European collaboration. It looks a lot like a Defender, to the point where Land Rover actually tried to sue and were told to get lost. So
and
there's
what
a lot of
there, like their trademark or patent or something on the initial design had expired.
Yeah, I think they basically, I don't know the ins and outs exactly of the case, but my long and short of it was they said, this thing looks a lot like a Defender. That's not okay. And presumably some fancy trademark lawyer said, well, actually, you know, it looks enough different, or certain proportions are different, that you can, that, you know, they can get away with it. It doesn't photograph well. Matt's showing it on the screen if you're on YouTube. It looks a lot better in real life than it looks a bit squashed on photos. It kind of looks better in real life. But and then there's a fusilier coming. A grenadier, by the way, is somebody who throws grenades. It's an old British military term. And then there's the fusilier coming, which will be available as an EV in the future, which is going to be smaller and cheaper. But the basic premise of this vehicle is he just wanted something which was simple. that in theory you could fix on the move that would last forever, didn't have like a billion different technologies on board. So it's ladder frame chassis, it's live axle, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there, which is, you know, every other entrepreneur like Musk or whatever, who's trying to build a car, is trying to look to the future and do a software-led car and an EV. This guy's come along and said, I'm going to do something properly old school. So it's what he's ended up with is something that reminds me a lot of a G-Wagon from a couple, you know, from a few years ago. It's very, very charming. The interior is fantastic. I don't even bring up a shot of the interior, but it feels like a fighter jet. You've got these really chunky switches for all your auxiliaries and everything else. Tons of switches, really sort of robust. It feels very well built. It's cool. It's really charming. Every one of the team, I drove it down our test track on Monday. Everybody from the team got into it and was like, this is cool. I want one of these. There is a touch screen, but it's modest. Rest of it's pretty analog. But the only thing about it is when you drive it, and we've got a video coming out of it, it drives like an old off-roader. It's got recirculating ball steering. And if, you know, it's years since I suppose the Wrangler's got it, but it's not as good on the Ineos as it is on the Wrangler. You know, you turn the wheel and it's a bit like a tiller. You kind of like turn it and then wait for something to happen. Then eventually the car makes a turn, and then it doesn't really do self-centering. So you have to wheel the lock off. So, and then it rolls a lot, and partly due to the tires, but also construction, our braking numbers were really not great in terms of how long it took to stop. I think it was like 160 feet or something. And then
getting some brake fade and stuff. So it,
yeah, and getting
repeated, it was getting
fade.
Worse each time.
So there's a lot of stuff where you say, okay, it's old school. It's trying to be simple, but it's also old school in a true sense, in that it feels kind of clumsy driving. The transmission and the engine is good, apart from off-road. Brian, who drove it out, Brian Wong from the team who went and did the off-road testing, said it was kind of hunting for gears. So it's got this kind of weird mix of nice BMW powertrains, BMW gearboxes, really kind of cool interior detailing, but then the driving experience on the road, at least, is you know, also very old school and a little bit disconcerting because you're so used to SUVs. And it's 80, the car we had was like 80 grand, so it's not cheap either. And a lot of me wanted one, and not just for like patriotic reasons. I kind of got into it and thought every day that I took the kids to school in this vehicle, it'd feel like a bit of an adventure. You know, like an old G-Wagon, you get into it and you feel like you're about to tackle the Himalayas. It's got that feel about it. But then I also reckon that over time, you just get a bit irritated by the fact that it's rocking and rolling and it's, you know, it's not relaxing to drive.
I was taking a look at it and I was watching your video that's coming out soon. And although this is a new car company and they're selling something that's new, I was kind of more looking at it as a competitor to some of the sort of the reimagination or restoration companies. Like you go to several companies are taking Ford Broncos and we're like, now we put a Coyote engine in them and we revise the suspension and you know, we make some changes. We put Apple CarPlay in it, or we take a Land Cruiser, or we take even a Defender of before, and for $250,000, you know, we'll redo it. We'll put an LS engine in it. We'll make it ride nice. And I go, okay, but how nice are you really going to make it? And it's cool and it's collectible if you're buying something like an Icon or whatever. But what if you don't want to spend $250,000, $300,000 on one of those? You wanted something that had that analog feel, but was turnkey, came with a warranty. This kind of fits into that category, right? Like, it's not the best vehicle out there, but it's kind of the retro toy that you're looking for.
If you had it if you had like a place in the mountains or something that you wanted to like have a car there, or, you know, like a third, you know, like, so it's not maybe your everyday thing, but it's your car for the mountains, it's the car for your ranch, it's the car for, you know, I think you would really enjoy it. All of us came away charmed. My only fear about it is, because you're right, there's that market, which, let's face it, is pretty small. The other part of it, just the only worry I have is that it's a bit like the old TVR versus Porsche argument in the sports car world. It's like you go, oh, my heart's saying I want an INEOS because it's really cool. Oh, but it's the same price as a Land Cruiser or a, you know, and you like, go,
The Lexus.
Or I'll buy a Defender. Yeah, the new Defender. And you're like, oh, okay, I won't buy one. And I think they might suffer a bit of that. But if they can get it known over here, you know, if you've got like a little a ski lodge or something like that, and you want like a, you know, because it's a proper beat it up vehicle. You know, you can, it's got rubber floor mats with a little valve so you can drain away the water. You know, it's that car. And you have to pay extra if you want carpet. So I think if you're like, you've got like a ski lodge or something like that and you want a vehicle for that, it'd be perfect. But, you know, that's limiting your audience a bit.
Yeah. And, but it does have that cool factor. Like if you had it on your ranch or whatever, or your big property, you know, like, you know, Goldberg could get one, right? On
his, it's got the cool factor, and it's more it's luxurious cool
to bring it into the valet, you know, or pick up the kids from school, or
oh, totally,
yeah, it's totally fun for that.
And the interior is way nicer than something like a Bronco or a Jeep. It feels more at market. It feels more solid. It's a proper thing. It'd be interesting to see what they do in the future as well, because they've got potentially a smaller vehicle coming, which I think will be a bit more kind of everyday. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that. But I had a conversation with one of their head of the US, is probably going back a year or two. And I said, he's talking about hydrogen cars. I was like, really? Hydrogen? Like, you know, where's the infrastructure? And INEOS is the world's biggest provider of hydrogen. I was like, okay, I'll shut up.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Try to get them with a tricky question. You know, they have some thought.
What do you do with infrastructure? Yeah. Like, we literally make more hydrogen than anybody else. Okay.
There you go. But you're right. When you guys tested this thing, there was just a few things that I felt like could be improved. Well, that I felt like could have been improved before they even put it out there. Like, why going with sort of this type of steering when they probably could have figured out a way to just do like a decent rack and pinion steering and some better braking and maybe a little bit more power? I mean, the engine that they're using, the BMW engine, I know they have it sort of tuned and configured for low end torque, but there's a lot. There's probably more potential in that engine than how they're using it.
I think it's really hard in this day and age to kind of do a, you know, everybody's this romanticized image, and I've driven a Defender across Africa. Chase, you know, this poaching sort of topic was an amazing experience. And, you know, it's, oh, with those cars, you sort of fixing the African bush. Well, as time went on, even with the original Defender, and you got into some of the more sophisticated, and as soon as you start having like ECUs and all that sort of stuff, it gets harder and harder to kind of like spanner them out in the bush. So the reality is this, because you got to make a decision, like how basic is basic, because as soon as you've got like BMW engines, BMW gearboxes, you know, you got to have a certain amount of electronics today. You know, it's not a man with a spanner and a pair of, you know, and a belt from his pants is going to fix the car. You know, you're just not there. So then it's like, okay, how much do you layer back in to make it modern and comfortable? And, you know, they're trying to just get, you know, they got rid of like, you know, it doesn't have electric seats, because it's like, well, that's another thing that can go wrong. It's another control unit. It's more electronics. And, you know, my old 911, the electric seats are broken on the passenger side. And so I kind of get that a little bit, but it's where's the line? And part of me thinks, you know, they've probably gone a little bit too far in the utilitarian direction in certain areas. But yeah, it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing in the way that the G-Wagon's a cool thing.
Yeah.
But the G-Wagon these days is a much more sophisticated vehicle.
The switchgear is cool because it's meant to feel sort of aerospace-ish and analog, with big chunky buttons that you can like wear gloves and hit the buttons. But if you look at it, you're like, it is all electronic. It's electronic air conditioning. It's got heated seats. It's got, it's got the start stop feature, which is just a fancy button probably on the BMW setup. The shifter is straight out of the BMW, so it's really not that much different there. As a matter of fact, it looks cool, but it's like, it's the only thing in the interior of the photos that looks a little out of place. It just looks a little too
modern. Oh, the gear stick. Yeah, it's like the same in the Morgan, because BMW fired that engine and transmission for Morgans as well, and you got this wonderful retro interior. I really want a Morgan Plus Four, by the way. And it has a and then you have this gear stick. It's
that's like gloss just, black, like piano black, gloss black with silver trim. It's like it's just too modern. You know, you'd really have to change that up. But what I don't know, you can't. You got to pick and choose
or wrap it or something. Are they,
I mean, I would have gone with like bigger brakes or a bigger booster or something to make this thing stop a little bit more than I would, you know, some fancier shift or gear selector.
But the switches do are fantastic. You like they're in the roof of the car as well, and they have this little thing go chung chung. You know, like you'd like maybe it's just connected up to like an iPhone cable, but it'd be like ching. You know, and you feel like you know Maverick is here.
Well, and you're right. It's all probably just it's all done by wire, but they give the buttons like a good mechanical feel to them.
I think everybody who looked at it loved it just for the fact that it was, it was different. And you know everything now. I mean, let's face it. Every car you get into now is just a big touchscreen. It's just a big iPad.
Yeah.
And everything's reductionist. This is the opposite. So, you know, it'll be interesting. They've got deep pockets, and we'll see how it progresses. They've got kind of big ambitions. A lot of ex Land Rover people involved in the business. So, we will see. Buy an Ineos. It's cool. Yeah, it's cool. And I think, you know, in today, I did think, would we, you know, would my family want one and would we drive around in it? And I just think it's a little bit, in the way that it drives, it's just that, just on that wrong side of utilitarian where it just becomes a bit irritating as an everyday driver. In the same way that sometimes a Wrangler and a Bronco can feel a little bit, you know, like once you go past the novelty, sometimes it's like, oh, I just want to go along in peace.
You look at it and you go, this would be a really fun vehicle to go off-road in Colorado. But what I don't want to do is drive from here to Colorado in it. So
yeah.
I just want to be there with it.
Yeah, which is probably, it's your mountain
house
car.
It's on your ranch at your cabin or whatever in Colorado.
It's cool, but it's old school. It's cool. Yeah, there's a lot to like about it.
Before we wrap up, do you want to go over some of these changes of the Rivian? I think we kind of, we were going to get into this a little bit last week and we kind of ran out of time and we're kind of waiting for all of the details, but Rivian R1T and R1S has been going through some changes, not completely a major facelift, if you will, but some improvements.
Yeah, it's kind of a Ineos rival, isn't it? $80,000 SUV, but just coming at it from, which goes off-road. It's just coming at it from a very different direction. So yeah, we went out and drove the new Rivian. R1T is obviously the truck. R1S is the SUV, which much to their CFO's angst, it's actually the SUV that sells, not the truck. There's more margin in the truck for sure. So they've updated the quad motor. So the quad motor has four, as it suggests, quad motor, four motors. And then they've introduced a tri-motor, so a three-motor version. And what I like about Rivian is they actually give you a choice. They're basically saying you can have two motors and this go this fast and have this much range, or you just keep adding motors and adding battery till you can spend another 20, 30 grand and get something that goes a lot further.
But to be clear, the dual motor, the three motor and the four motor, it's all still all-wheel drive. You either get one on each axle, you get the three motor is two in the rear, one in the front, and the quad motor is one on each wheel, but everything is still all-wheel drive.
Yeah, so if you start at the beginning, like the dual standard, you can't get like a single motor version. So you can it starts with a, if you look at the R1S, which is the SUV, the three row, you can get a, you start off basically with a double mode, two motors, EPA range of 270. We haven't put it through the Edmunds EV range test yet. They're saying 0 to 60, 4.5 seconds, 530 horse. So like fine for 99% of people. But then if you want a bit more range, you can add a bit bigger battery, which takes it to 330. That adds an extra sort of $7,000 to the price. But then if you want to go really long way, you can, they're claiming a range of over 400 miles, but then you're adding another $7,000 again. So basically what they're saying is just pay for the battery. If you want a bigger battery and a bit more power, then you know, just choose the one that you want. Then you can go into a three motor version, which I think is two at the rear, one in the front.
Yeah. That's,
or you can go into the car that Edmunds has that we've owned pretty much since from the beginning, which gets into quad motor. Actually, I think the quad, yeah, you can go, you keep going up and up. So it's, I like the fact that they're saying, you know, choose the vehicle according to your needs. And even the base model is probably enough for a lot of people, particularly if you're using it more of a kind of an urban environment. And they seem to have improved the areas where, you know, we could the right race counts and the team went and drove it. The suspension is better. You know, it rides a little bit better. They're updating the infotainment. I mean, we've always enjoyed our Rivian. We got the launch edition, so you'd expect certain things to go wrong. But say compared to the Lucid or even early Teslas, it's been a lot better, and we've genuinely enjoyed it. And I think it doesn't look very different. That might count against them a little bit, but it seems like a very sensible evolution of where they are. And
how long have you guys had your Rivian now?
Oh wow! When did it first come out? It's got to be—is it 2-3 years?
It's been like a few years now. So you guys,
you know, like the pandemic. You know the pandemic that you sort of almost like, you know, there's that whole period of your life where you're like almost kind of like what washed you by.
We just completely lost time for like 3 years.
You just completely lost time. So ours is a 2022, and we've done over 26,000 miles in it, and it's been really popular. We normally don't keep them this long, but. You know, it's still a relevant vehicle to keep updating it. So we hung on to it. Maybe we should swap it in for an R1S now.
Right. I was saying, like, it hasn't really had a lot of significant changes since you guys have owned it. So there was no point in swapping it for something else. But maybe interesting to see, you know, get the different model and get the upgraded version and see if it's worth it.
The other thing to call out, like with a lot of EVs at the moment, there are some pretty impressive lease rates right now on a Rivian. So if you are thinking, we talked about this, didn't we, last time, that if you think about taking the plunge, probably leasing a Rivian is probably the way forward, because then you get the $7,500 tax break built in. And then you're starting to, you know, look at somewhere in the 600. Yeah, a lot of money. But it's a more affordable way of doing it, and there are more better deals on the trucks than there are on the SUV, because they're struggling to shift one. And probably if you're looking for the outgoing vehicle, which is still a good vehicle, you still got all the software updates, there's probably some good deals knocking around on that. So
now, this new upgraded model, they did have to make some changes to the hardware to make it ride a little bit better. So although there have been software updates to make things better overall, its performance, its drivability, its comfort, but at some point you got to change the spring rates or recalibrate, you know, the suspension tuning a little bit more.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and also what we're seeing with, you know, range and charging technology and everything else, there comes a point where software only gets you so far, and you know, you need to update, you know, you need to update the hardware, the firmware and everything else that goes with it. So yeah, software only gets you so far. It's like an iPhone, isn't it? You know, you can keep doing the software and all the apps look the same, but the camera's not as good and the processor's not as fast and the battery doesn't last as long. It's that.
Yeah. All right. All right. So we're going to wrap things up. When do we get to see the Ineos video? When does that come out? It should be coming out right around when this is getting published.
I should know that, and I don't know the answer to that. Keep looking.
It's going to come out about the same time.
Subscribe to the Edmunds YouTube channel, and if you subscribe to the Edmunds YouTube channel, you won't miss it.
Then I won't have to ask these questions.
I won't embarrass myself. I tell you what we'll do as well is when it goes live, we'll send a thing out on the CarCast social platforms as well, or Edmunds. It'll go live on all Edmunds social platforms as well.
Yeah, so we'll put it out there as well. So if you guys follow us on social media, Edmunds and CarCast and myself and Alistair, if you follow us, we'll put it all out there. So, but it's an interesting video. I really wanted to see what you guys thought of the vehicle. And because you had an opportunity to put it on the test track and get it off-road, I thought you guys did a great job on this vehicle, because it is kind of cool and it's kind of interesting. And I'm seeing a few pop up around town. I've actually seen two or three on the
road. There are. There's one that passes me on the school run most days. And I think what we're trying to do with the video as well, we've had this concept, which I've hosted a few of, called Edmunds Fully Tested, where basically we run all the numbers, give all, you know, all that sort of stuff. We're trying to expand that concept to do some off-road testing as well. So this is almost a bit of a pilot for that. So I'm glad Matt had an early sneak of it before it's quite finished. So it's a new concept that hopefully is going to do really well. I'm actually away next week filming. We've got some more Edmunds U-Drags coming up. I'm not going to tell you where it is because it's a top secret location, but it is going to be hot as hell, 100 degrees
I'm
plus.
I'm sure it will be. I've got a Mustang Mach 1 sitting back there ready to go.
Next time.
Yeah, let's book it. Let's run it by legal, and if it all gets approved, we're good to go. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. Of course, go to edmunds.com. As we said, edmunds.com or edmunds.com/news. You can catch up on a lot of the stuff that we talked about here and subscribe to the YouTube channel. And if you haven't done so for CarCast as well, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. We'll post these up there, and we're trying to get more into putting these videos up there and putting a little bit more effort into the editing and stuff. But so I want your feedback. What do you want to see up there? So, guys, thanks so much. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.